In Nepal, the death toll has risen to more than 6,000 after Saturday's massive earthquake. Officials worried about the disposal of the bodies have ordered immediate cremations and say rebuilding will cost $2 billion. For the living, some help is finally making its way into the hardest-hit regions in rural Nepal. And a warning to our listeners, some of the language in this next conversation may not be suitable for children. Donatella Lorch is a longtime foreign correspondent. She lives with her family outside Kathmandu. Donatella, welcome.
Thank you.
And first, you wrote this week that you knew life would be getting worse in the days and weeks that followed the quake. What is it like there now?
Well, I mean, on the positive side, the government, the one major thing the government has done is trying to reinstitute as much electricity as possible into the villages and into the bigger city area, which is a huge help. Mm. Over 100,000 people are living on the streets right now because they can't re-enter their houses because either the houses have been destroyed or they're too unstable to go back in. And unfortunately, the rainy season has started early here. So it's torrential most every day or night. Aside from that, the big issue is aid getting out. There's massive amounts of aid coming into the airport. I mean, the flights are nonstop.
And there's been some question about whether or not the government is prepared to deal with this. Is the aid that's coming in actually getting distributed to people who need it?
Not as far as I know. The government is in a state of flux. No one really knows who's in control, who's deciding where it's going. It's different from Haiti in the sense that basically the U.S. government took over in Haiti and said, you're going here, you're going there. But in Nepal, it's a sovereign nation. I went to a town right outside from where I live. It's in the southern edge of the valley. I would estimate that more than 60% of the town is destroyed. It's horrendous. Mm. It's heartbreaking. The buildings are just crumbling in every single direction. Aid workers have been landing in Nepal with huge planes with massive amounts of tents and food and everything else, and none of it, not a single foreigner, has entered this town with aid. And it is 12 kilometers from the airport.
Just unbelievable. And you've said that you, in your mind, for a long time, had tried to prepare with this. You say you were obsessed with the possibility of a major quake hitting. And you even had go-packs with documents and supplies in them scattered around your house. But I wonder, when you actually see what you're witnessing there, if anything that you could possibly do to prepare actually prepares you for what you've seen.
Well, nothing prepares you for the constant fear and anxiety and the relentless aftershocks. No matter how many, go packs you have and whether we're living in a tent right now. My son, my 10-year-old son, does not want to enter at all into the house. He is so terrified of what's going to go on. But the issue is I have prepared enough that I have food and water to last for a few weeks. Many people here do not have that. Most people here do not have that.
For all the tragedy and the difficulties getting aid to people and relief, talk about some of the kindnesses that people are showing to each other that we've been reading about.
Oh, this is one of the most wonderful things about Nepal, is from day one, from the afternoon of the earthquake, I walked down my street to one of the most destroyed towns in the valley, and people had already set up their little makeshift tents, and they all welcomed me. They said, our food is your food. Our tent is your tent. Please feel free to come join us if you need anything. I mean, the Nepalis are amazing people because they know they have to survive despite their government. And they rely on their relationships with their friends, with their villages. They're very complex relationships. They're called gutis here. You know, it's religious relationships. It's work relationships, various businesses. And they're all interrelated, and that's what makes them thrive.
You've reported from all over the Middle East, Asia, from war zones. As a reporter, as someone who's seen destruction many times in your career, how does this compare?
The destruction is the worst I've ever seen, by far the worst. And it's much more terrifying in a way than being shot at because it's so unpredictable because you don't know when nature is going to turn on you. And there was a rumor going around on the radio that totally freaked out my 10-year-old, which was that there was a massive earthquake happening in 1 hour. And I told Lucas, you know, you may be only 10 years old, but you are going to be allowed tonight to scream out as loud as you can, bull****, this is not going to happen. And he smiled and laughed and screamed it as fast as he could.
Have you had any temptations to get him out?
My take on life is this is the reality. And he's surrounded by people who love him, who want to make him feel safe. He doesn't want to leave here. And I understand that because the earthquake is what our life is about. And he knows what it is. He has his friends that are involved in it. He has people that work for us that are involved in this. And, you know, I don't believe in hiding the realities of the world to my children.
Yeah. Donatella Lorch, a longtime foreign correspondent and freelance journalist, speaking to us from her home outside Kathmandu. Donatella, thank you so much.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you.